From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 28th day of June 2019. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about those surprising numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture as it relates to acreage and the grain stocks figures with Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Lance Honig, the chief of the crops branch, USDA NAS, will be here to explain how those numbers were put together, what the expectations are going into the August crop production report, because every state in the Corn Belt will be reassessed for the acreage figures. And then as we close out our time together in the first half hour of the show, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass, and we'll finish up in the second half hour with our Commodity Week program, including our panelists this week, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, along with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, Greg Ginder from FC Stone, and Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson. Stay with us for the whole hour if you can, right here on Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago today. July corn down 19 3/4, settled at $4.20 1/4. December 19 1/2 lower, $4.31 1/2 the settlement price. The May down 15 at $4.43, and July off 13 cents at $4.46 after this morning's USDA reports. July soybeans at $8.99 3/4, up 12 cents. November at $9.23, up 10 3/4. January 10 3/4 higher at $9.34 1/2, and the March up 9 3/4 at $9.41 3/4. Bean oil 43 cents higher on the day. The bean meal up 90 cents. Soft red winter wheat down 19 1/2 at $5.28. And the hard red down 16 1/2 at $4.51 1/2. Live cattle futures. June contract 7 1/2 cents lower at $110.50. Feeders in the August at $1.05 higher. $136.85 the settlement price. In July, lean hogs at $72.10 down $1.72 1/2. Now on the phone line to take a look at these numbers with us and the USDA figures released this morning is Mike Zuzlo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, thanks so much for waiting patiently for me this afternoon, Mike. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great, Todd. I'm in Shipshawana, Indiana today, heading to Michigan, getting a crop tour in and doing a baptism all at the same time. So it's a great day to be at the USDA report threshold and see all these planted acres that are barely up right now.
There are a lot of planted acres, and I have made note that they're, you know, farmers planted a lot of corn, or they continue to plant well into the month of June. There are a whole bunch of acres that I think haven't been planted as well. They showed up, I guess, as the bean numbers, but gosh, USDA came out with an 91.7 million acre corn figure today. That's down about 1.9 million from the prospective plantings report, not the June WASDE report, and they lost about 4.57 million acres of soybeans. Those numbers rocked the marketplace in both directions, corn down and the soybeans up. What'd you make of it all?
A couple things. I'm glad that the report came out the way it did in relation to the beans getting the bump, the beans getting the bullish reaction, and the low acreage number, because as we've talked all year long, that bean crop is a sincere worry and threat to us, especially given what China showed in terms of their May imports of soybeans from Brazil being down 31%, their year-to-date soybeans completely from all countries down around 25%, including the United States. So we don't want any more bean acres right now, and beans have been the leader to the downside. So I like that. And I liked also, and maybe I'm just looking at it Pollyanna-ish here, but I'm so glad we started to fill the gap in the July wheat and the July corn with the idea that we don't need to worry about that gap anymore, because that was something going into the report I think a lot of people in the market had their eyes on, is when are we going to go back down and fill that gap in the July corn so that we can go up another leg? And I, as far as USDA numbers, I haven't waded much into them, but I can tell you from the road trip that Missouri and Indiana look almost identical in terms of, yes, the crop got planted. I don't know if I agree with 92 million acres or 91.7 million acres, and I don't know how we could go from down 3 million last month in the WASDE report to back up on this report, if I'm reading those numbers correctly. So I don't really look at the corn numbers as far as the acreage after today. I'll wait for the July report and the July report also on the beans for the yield.
Yeah. So just a quick answer on that, and we'll have Lance Honig on in a moment, but it's an interview I've already done. So those two reports clearly are not connected in any way. World Ag Outlook Board is different from USDA NAS. And Lance, I asked him that question. He said, no, we just, you know, World Ag Outlook Board decided to move their number. They will come back to our number once we get to the July report. So that was his explanation on that one. I'm a little concerned that producers have not marketed as much corn maybe as they should have, or at least they're thinking that at this case, and for old crop, not particularly for new crop. Do you have concerns there?
Yes, I think the short-term charts look really rough if we go any lower than we went today, and that's where it goes back to the gap. You know, when you fill a gap, whether it's the upside or the downside, you don't want any follow-through in terms of changing trend. And so now that we've filled the gap to the downside, broken some key trend lines and some key moving averages, we want that market to heal up relatively quickly. But by the same token, you have a reason for the soybeans to go on higher if the weather continues to be wet. And I think that's the big dynamic for next week is, does the corn in terms of old crop sales need to be made? If the weather is drier, if the European model is accurate and we get 4 or 5 days more of dry weather, then we probably will need to get some more old crops sold. But I'm in no hurry right now, given what we've seen with the USDA reports and the way the charts look right now.
Hey, thanks so much. Anything else to add before I let you go and you get back to your vacation?
Have a great weekend.
Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalAnalytics.biz. Well, we're now joined by the chief of the crops branch at USDA NAS, Lance Honig. He is the one in charge of making sure that the numbers come out properly from the United States Department of Agriculture as it relates to those reports like the acreage figures that were released today. Thanks, Lance, for being with us. There'll be a lot of questions from farmers and traders around the board. But let's start with how many surveys you take and how this particular report's put together.
Sure. And really, you know, two separate significant survey efforts really go into the acreage number. They're both conducted about the same time, May 30th through June 17th is pretty much the time frame that we hit on that. One of them is a sample of farmers. That's exactly how we determine who's going to be included. Just over 68,000 of those farmers were selected. And so we reach out to them and we ask them to tell us exactly how many acres by crop they either have planted this year or obviously this time in many cases, how many they still intended to plant to the various crops. So we've got that information. We have a second survey happening the same time. And the process is fairly similar, but instead of selecting farmers, we select these segments of land. And each of these segments is roughly a square mile in size. We have just over 9,000 of those across the country. So that translates to roughly another 31,000 farmers this year that we talked to. But basically, the enumerator goes out to that segment of land, identifies every acre within that area, and documents exactly what's happening on each of those acres this year by talking with the farmers that operate that land. So we use that information, again, to find out directly from the farmers how many acres are planted to the various crops this year.
So in this case, for corn, more acres showed up than actually people thought probably would, though clearly planters have been rolling in the Eastern Corn Belt for a long time, and it looks like they planted corn longer than expected. And I suppose some of that's based on the number of acres of soybeans that didn't show up. What stood out for you in those numbers?
Well, obviously, you know, the corn number was bigger than a lot of folks expected. We certainly see that here this afternoon, and conversely, the soybeans were a bit lower. And I think if you look at what most folks were expecting, if you put those two numbers together, I don't think there's a whole lot of, you know, disagreement there. I think the difference is really in how many acres went to corn versus soybeans. And, you know, in a typical, if there is such a thing as a typical late year, it does become fairly common for, you know, as things get later, for a lot of acres to switch from corn to soybeans. But, you know, in many, many ways, this year isn't even typical for a late year. There's just so many other things besides just the weather that are impacting which crop or crops farmers chose this year. And I think what we're seeing with the results of these surveys is that this year in particular, even with the lateness, a lot of push toward corn this year, even late corn.
Is the World Agricultural Outlook Board's WASD figure incorporated in this number in some way, or is that just a waypoint along the way for them, and they'll catch up with you in the July report?
Yeah, there's no connection whatsoever between what they published earlier this month and what went into our number today. Our acreage estimates are based on the survey work that we did, again, reaching out directly to farmers. And as you said, they'll catch up to that in the next WASD report. I would be relatively sure that they'll incorporate this these new acreage numbers into the WASD report then.
Speaking of new acreage numbers, you're not done with this one yet. Your expectation across almost all of the Corn Belt states is to resurvey sometime in the month of July. Can you tell me about that process?
Sure. So on the area survey that I talked about, you know, we're identifying individual fields. And when we do that, you know, we talk with the farmer, find out how many acres are in the field, what they're going to do with that field. Is it going to be planted or has it been planted to the various crops? And if it's planted or expected to be planted to a particular crop, we also ask them how many of those acres were still left to be planted at that time. So what we're going to do in 14 states, primarily for corn and soybeans, although we will hit cotton in Arkansas and sorghum in Kansas, but basically we're going to go back to those fields and find out the ones that were where they identified acres still left to be planted when we talked the first time. We're going to go back to those fields and we're going to find out what actually happened in those fields just to make sure that something, you know, didn't change considerably from what was reported when we did these surveys.
And those will show up in updated figures in the crop production numbers for August?
Well, potentially. Obviously, we need to see what the results yield. You know, they may or may not indicate a need for change. We have to wait till we see the data. And as we work through that process, not only will we look at that information, but now, obviously, we're going to be talking about an early August time frame. We will have an opportunity to look at some at least more complete FSA-certified acreage information. We don't know exactly how complete that will be just yet. We'll take a look at that at the same time, and also we'll have the ability to look at some satellite-based information then as well. So we'll incorporate everything that we have available to us at that time and determine whether or not we need to make any changes. And if we do, certainly will be reflected in the August crop production report.
Can I talk about some of the other reports with you a little bit in the weekly crop progress and conditions report? Is there any guidance that's given to the observers, and there are what, some 30, or more than 3,000 of them, as it relates to the lateness of the crop and how they should consider that? For instance, there are many fields that are 6 inches to 10 inches tall for corn that look really good, but they're still only 6 or 10 inches tall.
Well, you know, one of the most important aspects of the both the progress and the condition numbers that we put out every week is that they are extremely consistent in how they're done. Even though it's, you know, subjective in nature, because you've got individuals obviously making determinations as to, you know, how far along something is or where those conditions fall. However, they're basing that on standard definitions. So we have standard definitions for what each of those condition ratings represent. We have standard definitions for every stage of development that we measure on that report. So we're going to ask them to stay true to those definitions, and so that you know, we have an opportunity for those data to continue to be comparable across weeks, across years, you know, as we look through the history.
Does the standard definition include staging portion? I mean, it does somewhere else, but for the condition, does it include that?
Well, for the condition, it really focuses on, for example, you know, the the definition of good is yield prospects are normal or above normal, moisture levels are adequate with only light disease and insect damage, pastures are providing adequate feed supplies for the current time of year. I mean, that's literally the definition of good condition. And so, you know, it leaves a little room for interpretation, but at least we're all operating off the same basis.
Yeah. Okay. So there's the 6 to 10 inch corn. whether is that good or not? That there is some subjective interpretation there, but at least it's in the place.
That's true. But you know, no matter how you look at it, it's going to be very hard to be a whole lot more definitive than that, because you're also going to have to make some determinations as to, you know, okay, so what's going to happen the rest of the year. Obviously, if you've got 6-inch corn, that raises some concerns about what's going to happen down the road. But who's to say what the weather is going to be as it advances through those critical stages? So it's really a catch-22.
Speaking of critical stages, what is the definition for silking?
So silking is simply the emergence of silk-like strands from the end of ears. It occurs approximately 10 days after the tassel first begins to emerge from the sheath, or 2 to 4 days after the tassel is emerged. So that is literally word for word the definition that we use.
So we'll be watching carefully for that one, as much of this crop is very, very late, especially the further east we go in mm-hmm. the Corn Belt. Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
No, I think that's good.
All right. Thanks, Lance.
Yep. Thank you, Todd.
Lance Honig is the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. Let's check the weather forecast now with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions. Hey, Eric. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
What can you tell me about the next 2 weeks?
Well, we're still on this pattern where we're going to be getting some warmer air in here that's going to stick around for a while. So big ridges building up into the midsection of the country while this trough is slowly migrating along the U.S.-Canada border. So most of our severe weather is going to be tucked away right up there along the U.S.-Canada border. But with so much moisture in the system, we got a lot coming right out of the soil, out of the plants. We've also got the Gulf of Mexico open. We're going to just daily see opportunities for, you know, thunderstorms, for convection. And we've seen it over the last 3 days, right? There's been some places that have just gotten hammered with rain, even though maybe 2 days before it, we weren't seeing too much. Now, the new model runs that came in this morning kind of pointing at what we were looking at in the week next week still came in wet across much of the Corn Belt as well for both the European and the GFS. So we're kind of just sticking with this pattern, you know, where we just can't break away from getting more rainfall than less. And the problem with that is you got cloud cover with that. You've got, you know, of course, we're just putting more water in that soil. And so this isn't the most ideal kind of conditions we'd want, given the fact we are going to be a little bit warmer than average. So yeah, it's one of those situations where, you know, had this been a normal year, we'd be loving this pattern right now. But because we're, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 weeks behind, this is no good.
Do you have a longer range forecast?
Yeah, well, what we're seeing by mid-month, I'm talking about after July 12th, 13th, 14th, we're going to actually start to see a broader trough. At least this is what the models are advertising, a broader trough that's setting up in the Hudson Bay area. And what that's going to do is that's going to prevent us from having a lot of ridging over the Great Lakes. Now, if we ridged over the Great Lakes, we'd go hot and dry. But instead, it looks like we're going to have some northwest flow. We're going to have a lot of those mesoscale convective systems or squall lines like we've been seeing recently. We're going to have this wetter track that's going to go from North South Dakota straight through the heart of the Corn Belt, I think, as we progress toward the end of the month. Now, the thing about that pattern is it's not going to be one that's going to give us a lot of days where we're in the upper 80s or lower 90s where we could get some of that heat we need. So we don't like the fact that we're going back toward that cooler pattern toward the end of the month rather than one that gives us a little bit of sustained heat. So overall, I don't like the fact I have to say that, but you know, it's kind of the opposite of what we'd want given the late plant. So it's certainly one that's kind of teamed up well with what we've got going on with El Nino. It's not a perfect match, but it's something to be on the lookout for.
It's sure been hot in Eurasia.
Well, Europe on the whole has got an interesting picture. You've probably heard a lot about the heat wave we have right now across much of Europe, especially in Western Europe. And the U.S. women are playing soccer today, and it's going to be a scorcher. They've broken a lot of records across Europe as well. But while this massive wave-breaking event, I'm talking about that, we've got this big ridge that's getting undercut by this trough, is happening in Western Europe, we've actually got another trough that settled in north of the Russian wheat belt. So they've been getting some rain there and some cooler weather after going hot and dry for quite some time. Now, it's not extending extending all the way south toward the Black Sea, but it's at least a better look than they've had recently. And so Europe, hot west and cooler east, especially cooler north and east. And so that can be looked upon favorably by some in that part of Europe, in Eastern Europe, but a scorcher there in the western half of the continent.
Anything to keep an eye on in the tropics?
Well, we do. We need to be watching very carefully how the upper levels of the atmosphere are responding to this thing called the Madden-Julian Oscillation. And right now, it's being very supportive of development over the eastern Pacific. So we've already had Hurricane Alvin. Now, we don't really care too much about what's going on in the eastern Pacific in terms of hurricanes. But as that slowly migrates toward the end of the month, it's going to become more favorable over the tropical Atlantic. So while we've had a pretty suppressed season so far in terms of systems coming out of the Atlantic, we may need to be watching toward the end of the month for a lot more activity, which also makes sense climatologically as well. So there's a lot we got to keep watching over these next few weeks.
Hey, thanks so much, Eric.
Yeah.
That's Eric Snodgrass with Agrible and Nutrient Ag Solutions.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
Up next, the June 28 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Greg Ginder of F.C. Stone out of Chicago, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Hollister, Missouri, Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Let's begin by dealing with some of the numbers that USDA released today. We'll start with the acreage figure. In the June acreage report, USDA now says farmers have planted 91.7 million acres of corn. That's down about 1.09 million or 1.1 million acres from the prospective plantings report, but up from the June WASD numbers. The soybean figure at 80.040 is down 4.577 million acres from the expectations back in March. Chuck Shelby, what do you make of this report when it was released?
Well, the initial reaction was corn was up 15 because of the stocks report, but then when the acres number came out, the market took an opposite direction. So at this point in time, a lot of skepticism of those numbers, but it is what it is. They are going to resurvey, Todd. We'll see what it is a month or so from now.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about that stocks report, too, because that was if you were watching at that point, the market did jump, and then it said, hey, wait a second. So what did the stocks report show?
Well, I felt that was a positive because a lot in the trade had thought we weren't using as much corn as we had. But maybe that comes back to we've got a record hog herd again and, you know, look at a lot of corn going into cattle. So I thought that was a positive. Maybe something going forward that, you know, at these prices, we're still going to use a lot of corn.
Jackie Vakes, when you take a look at the total numbers for corn and soybeans, do they tell a different story together than they do apart? And what did you make of the figures as they were released?
Well, when you look at the numbers, you know, we're not reflecting all the numbers we normally or all the acres we would normally plant. So I was shocked at the 91.7, to be honest. And I think you said planted, but planting intentions is what this really was, because they surveyed until, what, the 17th of June, Todd? That was right. And so when you look at that, we've heard plenty of guys who switched from beans to corn. So I had expected to see the bean number go down, but I did not really expect the corn number to be what it is. And so, like Chuck said, they're going to resurvey, and on the August report is when we'll find out more. We'll at least have a little better handle on what's going on.
You can hear more from Commodity Week on our website at willag.org. That wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report.